Welcome to Crash Concepts, where the economy, energy, and the environment are explored. Up next, fresh ideas and insights into the factors that are driving the world and shaping your future. Presenting information you can't afford to live without, here's Chris Martinson.
Welcome, everyone, to this Featured Voices podcast brought to you by peakprosperity.com. I'm your host, Chris Martinson. It is July 31st, 2019. The data, it's clear. The world, it's headed for trouble, especially the natural world. Humans, look, we're overdoing it. And the ecological stresses are mounting. The human stresses are mounting. This year, in 2019, we have the lowest Arctic ice extent on record, and we're breaking heat records in Europe, and the insects are still missing. They're mysteriously gone, as if a rapture happened, except it only took tiny things with exoskeletons. Look, the data's equally clear. People are tired of hearing about all of that. They want to know what they can do. And here, too, the data is really clear. One of the most important things you can do is to plant a garden and eat from it, and even heal yourself from it. The benefits are almost too numerous to list. I find that my garden improves my mental, my physical, my emotional, and even my spiritual well-being. Today's guest is Marjorie Wildcraft, who has made it her life mission to educate, train, and inspire people about gardening and health and things that you can do on your own homestead. Marjorie Wildcraft is the founder of thegrownetwork.com, a website and community devoted to stopping the destruction of the earth, reclaiming natural health from the sometimes misguided healthcare and nutritional systems, preventing extinction of heirloom varieties and heritage breeds, and stopping the torture of animals. Marjorie is also an author with several titles, including Grow Your Own Groceries, Turn Your Backyard into a Food Production System, which is a 2-DVD set that has sold over 500,000 copies, and Snakebite, How I Successfully Treated a Venomous Snakebite at Home. Boy, we're going to be asking Marjorie more about that one later on. Absolutely. She's currently working on a book titled Grow, All True Wealth Comes from the Ground. Yeah, I love that subtitle. We're getting to that too. When she's not building an online network, being mom, tending her family's food supply, Marjorie loves playing, running, doing gymnastics, skateboarding, acquiring skills from the Paleolithic era. Yep, part cavewoman. And experimenting with anything and everything related to food production and sustainability. A lot of you have been asking to have Marjorie on the program. Here she is. Marjorie, welcome to the program.
Oh, Chris, it's such a delight to be here. My God, I've been a fan of yours for years, and you're doing some awesome, awesome work. So glad we're finally connecting up.
I am too. And it's so glad to have you on. And listen, Marjorie, my audience certainly doesn't need any more in the way of problem definition. We are perhaps a little maybe too steeped and familiar with the wildly unsustainable trends, you know, in the economy, fossil fuel dependence, ecological overshoot, all that. But we'd love to hear how and why you got started on the path that led you to the founding of thegrownetwork.com.
Yeah, I will never forget the night. It my life completely changed in one moment, actually. And it started out so innocently. I was volunteering on a farm to table project with I was living in Texas at the Texas Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association. The idea was we'd get, you know, locally grown organic food into the school system. And I'm like, hey, the president of the TOFCA happened to live in my county. And I said, hey, Steve, I'm a big kind of community activist. Let's do it right here at the little elementary school down the street from me. Once we kink out all the bugs and all the process and, you know, we make it happen, we'll replicate this across Texas, you know, we'll McDonald's this bad boy, right? Mm-hmm. And make a big difference. And so we were so excited. And we had a really great group of movers and shakers and volunteers. And the whole thing crumbled. It was the third meeting. I will never forget it. We're in the community center sitting on those crappy, you know, folding chairs with chip formica table and the buildings echoing because they've never invested in any, you know. And but we're so excited. And it came time to put pen to paper on who would provide the food for, you know, the vegetables for this program. And I'll never forget because it became obvious that there weren't enough local farmers in all of Bastrop County to provide part of the vegetables for one small rural elementary school. And you know, we're right next to Austin, Texas. I mean, this is like supposed to be a progressive area. And I just, my body started shaking. I just started shaking and it would not stop for hours because I knew, you know, I knew about the 4 days just in time delivery thing. And, you know, I knew the whole food supply was pretty bad anyway. But somehow, you know, I guess we all kind of think, even though I was living out in the country, it was like, we all kind of think, oh, we'll just go out in the countryside if anything bad happens, right?
And yes.
Right? I mean, you know, your average urbanite, suburbanite, they're like, yeah, you know, my thing's I'm going to head out and go rob something, you know, right? You know, you don't want to think about yourself, but that is the kind of bad. There's no food out there. There's none. There's no food growing out in the countryside. And when I realized that really we are bereft of anything, and anything that happened to that just-in-time delivery trucking system, you know, any disruption, oh my God. And I like, really, I just couldn't stop shaking. And I said, you know what? We have got to completely rebuild the local food system, and farmers come from gardeners, and, you know, it's going to start with me. And to be honest with you, prior to that, I wasn't particularly interested in growing my own food. That's why I was helping to organize local farmers, right? You know, like, let's do that. But I said, that's it. You know, whatever I have done in my life previously is not important, but, and just for the next decade or so, I mean, the nightmares, just waking up in the middle of the night at the horror of what could happen, you know, just what could happen if this food supply system, ever collapsed for, and believe me, when you start going down that rabbit hole, we don't need to here. And I know your folks already understand all the different rabbit holes that you can go down. The probability is astonishingly high. It's way too high for my comfort level. So that's why I'm doing something about it. And at first it was just me in my backyard. I was taking every gardening permaculture course, anything, you know, I was running around with barefoot crazies in the national forest. Like, how do they do it? Right. They're fat, you know, they're healthy, you know, like, you know, they're obviously eating. You know, how do you do it? How do you provide nourishing food for yourself? And of course I was a young mom at the time. So nourishment became really, really important as I began to understand just how sad the existing food system is. It's not only bereft of nutrition, but it's also toxic for your body. So, you know, everything, all the forces in my life were pointing me toward this new path and this new direction. And that's basically how the Grow Network was born.
Well, that's a fascinating story. And that's a real parallel to myself. You know, when I really took gardening seriously, I had that same moment where I woke up and I understood food insecurity as it's currently practiced in the, you know, 5 days of food in any community without the trucks rolling in. And I started with that. And now, after being at this for more than a decade myself, I would look back and say, oh, I would run towards this. I'm not running away from something. It's clearly something we need to do. But I get so much out of my garden that goes beyond simple calories. But that's me. Maybe other people are built differently.
No, that's actually the beautiful thing about it. And that fateful night was in 2003, actually. But the really beautiful thing about it is, and I used to be so fearful, so depressed. You know, it was a really, really bad period, the blue period of my life. You know, right? They talk about Van Gogh. I like whatever, but. But through growing food, eating nutritious food, getting outside, connecting with nature in magical and mysterious ways, it's amazing. Yeah. The relationships with the chickens and the dogs and the plants, you know, and through it really healed me. And I feel very, very secure and very comfortable no matter where I am. And I feel very positive about the future. You know, I know we have just begun to hit the rapids. We are not yet even anywhere near the Class 4 and Class 5 that we're headed for. But I feel very confident and calm about what's coming and what we're involved in now. Because I do have some basic skills, and I do have, I know, I used to do a lot of spiritual work, and you're going, oh, you know, you're trying to heal your root chakra, and you're doing the deep squats. Like, no, just grow a garden. Go get some chickens. You will heal your root chakra, right? You know, forget all that other stuff.
Yeah. You know, we have a couple of sayings that Adam and I have put out there. And one that was really important to me when people ask, you know, often they get a little overwhelmed, like, oh, my God, I got to grow all my own food. I'm like, no. I set a really low target for people. I said, why don't you grow 3%? 3% of your family's calories, because the difference between starting from 0% and 3% is night and day, right? Just everything you have to learn to even get that 3% is already in place. And those are transferable skills. And yeah, maybe you go from a mountain to a desert to a lush, Eastern climb. Doesn't matter. There's still transferable skills in there. But for the people, like you said at the beginning, you know, those people who magically think that if times get tough, I'll learn how to hunt, you know, not understanding that there are no animals left to hunt or in any realistic way, but also thinking maybe magically, hey, you know what, if I have to, I'll start to learn to grow then. But I'm a big fan of people getting their fingers in the soil now, early on, because it's a big learning process.
And you're so right on. For somebody who's just a beginner, I really recommend a few herbs on a windowsill. And you're absolutely right, because everything you learn from those three or four potted plants is completely transferable out into the garden. But why I recommend herbs is it's astounding the difference in your old dishes when you put a little bit of fresh basil that you've grown yourself in it. I mean, it completely transforms it. I'm not kidding. Like, how could just like a couple of teaspoons of crushed basil change that normal chicken recipe? But it really, really does. And, as a mom, it's so fulfilling to have people going, I want seconds or I want thirds. You know, that's what you want. I don't know why we want them all to overeat, but they love it so much. And it's when those fresh herbs just make such a huge difference. And those herbs and just a couple of tips to get them going. First of all, get as big a pot as you can put on that windowsill, because the more soil you have in there, the more water retention it'll have and the more forgiving of your lackadaisical schedule it will be. Get as big a pot. The other thing is put it somewhere where it's friggin' obvious that you're going to see it every day. So I like to put mine like right by the kitchen sink where I'm washing dishes or passing all the time. That way you see it and you notice it and it's a part of you. If you put it in the spare bedroom, those things are going to die. Mm-hmm. Right? You're never going in there, right?
Yep.
So, and then the other thing is, just start with a couple of the real basics. Basil, maybe some chives, maybe some oregano. These are pretty bulletproof plants. I mean, they're tough. They'll be able to withstand your novice bumbling around. And those are the ones that are the tastiest. Mint's another beautiful one. Those are the ones that really have a great flavor impact. And when you really start to, just notice that taste of fresh herbs on stuff, and then you're like, maybe I'm going to graduate to a bigger potted plant on the patio, and I'm going to try some of those real homegrown tomatoes. Oh my God, like night and day, right? So I know many, many, many people in our network started out that way with just some herbs. And then they went to a little small, maybe a 4x4 garden. And then they went and they did more and more and more. And then they, now they're, but I'll tell the other really inspiring thing is, so I was sitting with a friend one time and we were joshing around about this and that and the other, and how much food do you grow? And she didn't think she was growing much, but we were putting the numbers down on paper. And I'm like, well, you got a couple hundred square feet garden. There's probably about this many calories being produced in that. And then you've got some chickens. So you got this many eggs. Let's look up. Okay. Let's see. It's 63 calories for a medium sized egg. And then she's raising some rabbits. I'm like, geez, you can grow half of your own food in your backyard size space in less than an hour a day. And that's counting the calories, that's counting the time, that's counting everything. And we went ahead and made a video on that one, which I think it's at growhalf.com. If anybody wants to see it for free, we'd be more than happy for you to see it. But half is huge. Half is huge. So after you've gone through your herbs and you've upgraded, because people are like, oh, I don't want to become a migrant worker just to produce food, right? It's totally doable. By the way, that's going to be the most enjoyable hour of your day.
I agree. I agree.
But it's totally doable with a modern lifestyle. And, that's going to save you so much money. Medical bills, health bills, those allergies that have been bugging you forever will kind of disappear after a while, or that arthritis or whatever else is going on for you. You'll find the eczema. It starts to disappear when you eat really good food.
Yeah, so this is all fantastic stuff, and we have a good friend and contributor at the site who's talked about just putting. He lives in a more urban area in St. Louis, and he's got pots that are self-watering, because he's devised a little thing where you water one big chamber and they self-water, and so very very bulletproof for the novice, and starts him indoors, puts him out on his little patio, and has tomatoes all throughout the season, starting early. And also, if he puts a couple extra up, he can hand out a couple of these buckets to other people, start building community that way, because who doesn't want to be handed a producing tomato plant at some point? So these are things that people, as long as you have access to a little bit of sunlight, you can actually get started, right?
Absolutely. And then, you know, there's a lot of people that actually use those. I have not gotten into the LEDs and doing things in dark apartments. And in terms of sustainability, I'm not totally certain if that makes sense or not. But you know what? If that's what floats your boat and you're familiar with technology and that's what gets you started, do that. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You don't do that, right? Yeah. There's a tremendous amount. But, you know, like, let's look at the some of the examples in Russia where everybody lived in those, oh my gosh, those apartment blocks. Right. The communist system there. Well, they had dachas that were just outside of town, which were basically gardens, you know, community gardens. So there's lots of ways to get access to land and community. There's community gardens all across the place. I think it's called Shared Earth. There's lots of websites where, you know, people go, hey, I got a backyard. I would not mind you having a garden here. I would love it, you know? So there's lots and lots of other alternatives. Like, I am a real believer that if you set your mind and your intention on something and you open your heart and you say, gosh, I really want to be growing my own food in some way. I live in a closet, right? Like I live in a closet. I don't have any sunlight. There's a way to make it happen. You know, the universe really is a very kind and loving place, and with a clear intention and a positive emotion, you can really attract things to you. So lots and lots of positive, you know, there's a town in my community here. I'm seeing signs up from farmers. They're like, hey, you know, come give us a half a day of labor, we'll give you a box of vegetables. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's lots and lots of ways to do it. So set your mind to it and you can make it happen.
Well, let's close one of the loops here then. You just mentioned that now you can see signs for farmers saying, hey, come work a little bit. So from that time in 2003, when your observation was that maybe even one small elementary school's part of its veggies couldn't even be supplied locally, where are you today in your local community in that regard?
We have gotten more farming going here. And the reason that farmers have those signs up is the biggest expense for a farmer is labor, especially here in the United States, where, you know, minimum wage in a lot of places is starting to creep up, you know, $10, $11, $12 an hour. You can't, you know, it's really tough to grow food and compete with the petrochemical agribusiness at those prices. So, you know, farmers are really happy for help with labor. And then, you know, I mean, I think that's an awesome deal to go work for 4 hours, be outside, have somebody else growing all the food, right? You know, making mm-hmm. all those decisions of when to fertilize or having all the skill. And all you have to do is come do whatever they tell you, weed or hoe or harvest or whatever. And you get a big box of vegetables and that's, you know, that's your food supply for the week or a big chunk of it. Like that's one heck of a deal. You know, who is it? Vicki Robinson wrote Your Money or Your Life. And, you know, would you have rather worked for 4 hours somewhere and made money and then tried to go get organic food or just, you know, go work for a farmer, right? So, yeah, there's lots of options out there.
That's a good one. And I really like that idea of eating organic food while being outside, maybe even opening your eyes and seeing how they grew and maybe learning something from that process as well. You don't have to go and earn the money in a different, maybe soul destroying way or whatever's up for you in that point in time. So that sounds like a great way to go out and begin to connect those dots for people. And I personally know people who do work on that. We have lots of organic farms around here in Western Massachusetts. And so people have a lot of opportunities to go out and learn, you know, but I got to tell you, it was maybe 10, 11 years ago, we got a really great, just like the all-star local organic farmer guy. He's been doing it forever. He's really smart. And I fancy myself at that time, I had a little more hubris than I do. I'm like, I'm a really smart guy. So I go up to him like, hey, I've been gardening for about maybe 20 years already. I would like to really boost that though. So how long will it take me to learn to garden, you know, the way you do, you know, to farm the way you do? He goes, oh, about 10 years. I said, okay. So guess what? I'm a really smart guy and I'm a fast learner. He goes, oh, well, for you, it'll be 10 years. I was like, well, I don't think you understand. Like I'm, you know, and I went down that path for a little while, and he finally circled around and said, listen, I could show you how to farm on my farm in a year, but, at your place, the soil's different and the climate's a little bit different. And there's, you're going to have to go through the year where it was wetter than anything you'd experienced. And then there's the year where it was drought during the seedling season. And then there's the year with the little funny bugs you've never seen. And then there's the year the brown mold shows up, right? He just said, until you've had experience through those in your place, you won't, it takes time to develop that mastery. So I think anybody can get started, but what are your thoughts on this idea that it does take a sense of place and mastery over time?
And it does, to really it build. Does take, yeah, and it does take about a decade. And a couple of things to just join in on that, like sweet potatoes, great, great crop for the South, right? Texas, it's hotter than blazes all summer long. Sweet potatoes love the heat. They're very drought tolerant. And then the great thing is that when you harvest them in the fall, you can store them all winter, right? So traditionally they were stored in a pit underneath the house. And then by the springtime, when you were just about depleted with your supply, they had already started sprouting. So you would just go ahead and use those sprouts and replant again. And you went around again. You only get to plant once a year to try it out, right? And a lot of plants, you only get one season that you can do it in. So, yeah, you're right. You've got all these little challenges that are going to come up year after year after year. Like one year, I was like, oh, this is so great. The sweet potatoes are the greatest crop ever. This is going to solve all of our problems. And the next year, I like really overwatered them. They were so lush. They were just huge. And the leaves were great. And there were no tubers because they were like so well pampered.
Why bother?
Like, damn, yeah, you're right. And then there's going to be the years with the insects, and there's going to be, and then there's the other things like people said, you know, do you have goats? And actually, goats in Texas are probably, they're a much better animal than cattle. The goats eat way more different variety of forage and the forage that lives there. The thing about goats, by the way, is you really have to manage them. Most people do not manage the goats well. The goats eat everything and then they just utterly destroy a landscape. But lots of people I know that have been really working with the goats have just increased the fertility on their land incredibly using goats. And they said, Marjorie, why don't you have goats then? And I said, you know what? I just can't stand goats. You know, they're like, they're really precocious and they're really cute, but I'm really into edible landscaping and all this other stuff. And just, man, the minute a goat gets out, there goes my edible landscaping. And you have, you know, I mean, and they just didn't vibe with me. You know, we just didn't work. I'm much more of a rabbit person, or even my husband was into cattle. I mean, we like slower, calmer animals, you know? You know, that took a while to figure that out. Like, we aren't goat people, right? I think Carla Emerson talks about the psychology of people and livestock in her Encyclopedia of Country Living. And it was a pretty insightful piece. Like, oh, we're not goat people. We're, you know, like this, right? Or, you know, I love geese personally. My family hated geese. Oh my God, they hated the geese. And, you know, so we ended up having a compromise as I put the geese out in the orchard, which was far from the house. But, you know, I mean, there's the reality of who you're going to, like, I wanted to plant this big oak tree right here. And my husband was like, well, that will totally block my view. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of factors of why you gotta, yeah, you're right. It takes time. And then it just does take time, but don't let that deter you, because it's such an incredibly wonderful adventure. And the life is so much more abundant and giving. And, you know, if you make mistakes, it's harsh, and there's the reality of death, and there's the reality of stupid things you do that kills things, and you feel terrible about that. But as you come through it, I've seen land regenerate. I've regenerated land and seen it go from just being like a sand pit to being a lush, highly productive area. And when you've experienced that and you know that, and it's really incredible how forgiving and how abundant nature is. So don't let the time frame deter you.
Well, absolutely. You can get started right away, but it just does take time to figure these things out. And I'll give you a quick example, which fits in with your story as well. I also like to plant for medicines. One of the most potent medicines I know for flus and viruses is elderberry extract and elderberry syrup. So I love growing elderberries. And at my old house, we were on an old alluvial sandbank from an old ice age era lake. So 60 feet of sand, looked like beach sand under the soil. Very hard to keep nutrients in. But at any rate, elderberries love wet feet. They hated growing over there. I watered them like a fiend. But, you know, they were okay, but not happy. Well, here, I'm in a new place, and I notice there's a lot of jewelweed along one side, which is a very lush sort of a plant here in the east. And I said, well, that's probably wet there. So I planted elderberry twigs with little roots coming out of them last year. And this year, they're over 9 feet tall. Like, that's just perfect.
Right. Finding,
yep.
Yeah. Finding the right spot. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I haven't watered them once, and I love them. But it's, you know, the spot, it would take me 10 years to sort of remediate the soil to be clay 3 feet deep, which is what they need. But anyway. So you take what you can and you do what you can. And then maybe, you know, maybe the other place was better for goats and I could have been a goat person and traded goats with somebody at elderberry. So we learn these things. But you work on your spot. You've said that recently you said that you could grow half your food in an hour a day. What kind of a tell us what that operation would look like?
Yep, absolutely. It's just a very simple three-part system. And to set your expectations, I would say that if you have no skills at all, give yourself a year to get these three systems up and running, and you can do it at any time. But the first is a garden, and just start out with a small garden. I would say a 50 square foot, 100 square foot at the most. Start small. That way you'll be able to focus on it, and it won't be overwhelming, and your chances of success are going to be a lot higher. And that garden does not produce a ton of calories, but it produces a lot of nutrition and diversity. But you definitely, you know, so get a garden going, and that's one component. And I don't have the numbers right in front of me here. I'm thinking it's something like you can get about 35 to 40,000 calories a year out of in one season out of a garden like that. The other is going to be a little flock of chickens. There's a myth that you do not have to have a rooster, so you don't need to. But even just, you know, six ladies laying eggs every day for you, and hens do not lay every day of the year, but you can get about 200 eggs or 250 eggs per hen in a year. And, you know, you will be egg wealthy. You will be very rich in eggs. And eggs have so much great stuff. The whole thing about cholesterol, which is all a myth being perpetuated from mm-hmm. the 1960s. It's a complete food, lots of protein, lots of fat. The yolk is actually the food sac for the chick, which is the white part, and that is also a food sack for you. It has an unbelievable amount of nutrition in it. It's really what we're going. The malnutrition is the elephant in the room for the United States, right? We're like more malnourished than Africans or Kenyans or whatever. You know, I mean, it's really bad here, right? We're huge. That does not mean we're nourished. And then the other would be just a small rabbitry. I really no longer grow my rabbits in cages anymore. But I do recommend, as a novice, that's a good way to go just because it's so much more controlled. And you know, there's just one less variable or less variables for you to have to manage. I would say eventually, for the health of the rabbits, grow them in other ways, and we'll show you other ways. But one buck and three breeding does. And even in Texas, where we only have about 6 or 7 months of production because it's too hot in the summertime for them to breed, I was getting 75 to 80 rabbits a year out of that. And one rabbit is the equivalent of like a chicken. In fact, chicken, it's, you know, I often served rabbit and forgot to tell people, and they just assumed it was chicken meat. The great thing about it is you can process a rabbit at home 15 minutes before you cook it. You know, I would cook it and serve it to my family. If the boys weren't there, we might have leftovers. and then the next day it would be rabbit soup with vegetables. And, you know, like my mom did when I was a little girl growing up, you don't even need to have electricity. We would just have a small pot we'd have a stock pot on the back of the stove, where she kept all the bones and things like that, that made the soup stock from. The most important thing that you're going to get out of those rabbits is going to be the organs. I do not recommend eating organ meat from anything from the commercial food supply, but a liver, go check it out. Liver is unbelievably rich in all these vitamins and minerals and CoQ10 and vitamin A and all the B vitamins and all these vitamins that you don't normally get access to. It's a superfood. It is way, way better than anything else that you can grow. So you get to eat the organ meats. And then, of course, there's the brains and the kidneys and all the other bits. I still do give the intestines to the dogs.
Yeah.
You can do some things with the skins and tan them. Sometimes I do. Actually, I feed the skins to my dogs. They eat the whole thing, and then the fur ball goes out somewhere on the edge of the property. I don't know where. You know, and dogs love it. Like, that's like food. It's in fact, I really hardly have to feed the dogs much at all. By the way, I do have two dogs. I have a medium-sized dogs. I don't want real big ones because you have to feed the dogs. And I don't want real small ones because these dogs have got to do work against raccoons and coyotes and things, right? And I want two of them because dogs can sometimes be lazy, but it's, you know, if they got two of them, they can work together and they're pack animals. I want them to be the pack. I don't want them to think I'm the pack. I want them to, they're working dogs, right? And they protect the chickens and the rabbits and the gardens and all that stuff. And then they get, you know, their deal is they get some eggs and they get the intestines and the skin. So, you know, that's a real simple little system there. And, you know, I really have clocked it out and timed it and said, you know, on average, I'm doing about an hour a day, you know, in the spring, sometimes on the weekend, glorious, beautiful spring day with the sun. And that's when you're doing all the bed prep and, you know, getting the garden going and that whole thing. So, you know, it might be a little bit more, but then there's some days when, you know, this kid's got an appointment with a dentist and the tire just went flat and, you know, one of those mornings. And so all you do is you just toss some pellets into the rabbits, glance at the garden, make sure nothing's wilting, and wave to the chickens. And, you know, it's 2 minutes, right? So there's it's a very flexible system and adaptable. And then there's lots of things you can do to really optimize it to where you're saving even more time. But half will make a huge difference, not only on your budget. You can't hardly buy food that high quality. The nutrition, that kind of nutrition just doesn't exist. You're not going to get that nutrition out of a pill. Don't fool yourself. And then the level of health and vibrancy and the security. Because if you can grow half, and if you've mastered those three things of being able to get a garden going with the rabbits and the chickens, you know, if the unthinkable does happen and you find all your in-laws and your cousins and all these people you'd forgot about that are now on your doorstep because they knew you were kind of crazy, but you were doing it, well, you're like, okay, we're going to build some more rabbit cages and we're going to get some chickens. You know, we can just replicate these systems over and over again. And you've got work for all these people to do. All right. You know, so
yeah.
You know what I mean? When you've got a system that works for half, you can definitely replicate that and unfold it into more.
Absolutely. So tell me how these three systems fit together. We've got the garden, we've got chickens, we've got rabbits. Are you feeding the chickens and rabbits with commercial foods that come from somewhere?
I would recommend in the beginning doing that just because it's going to make it easier on you, right? It's very easy to provide about half of the nutrition for and the food stuff for all of these. One reason I recommend rabbits as a meat source versus chickens, everybody goes, well, why don't we raise chickens? Chickens and pigs are very expensive meats to raise. They're omnivores. And so chickens want to eat grains and they want to eat food that you would actually want to eat. Rabbits and goats and cattle and, you know, guinea pigs and things like that are herbivores, and they tend to eat things that do not compete with us at all. So actually, a lot of my rabbit food, I'll just go out with a scythe in the morning and cut some grass or tree trimmings. You know, in the wintertime when you're trimming your orchard trees, oh my God, the rabbits just love chewing on that bark. I mean, that's what rabbits in the wild live on up in the, you know, near the Arctic. They're living on bark you know, young sapling, the chewing on that. So there's lots and lots of ways to feed them. And of course, chickens, it's legendary on different ways that you can feed chickens. And of course, all of your own scraps and waste and things like that. And they really are very synergistic together like that. And it really doesn't take long to be able to provide half of the food for all of those. You know, the food for your garden is going to be your compost. So, take steps though, right? Don't try to do it all at once because then you'll be setting yourself up for failure. So, you know, get your chickens and just go ahead and buy chicken feed. And, you know, if you can't afford the really good organic non-GMO, then just get the GMO feed, just get started, you know, just do what you can. Great. and say, look, I know later I'm going to improve this. And then I know later I'm going to improve that. And I know later I'm going to improve that. But I just want to get started. And that's the key thing.
Absolutely. And for me, chickens are because my weakness is I'm a lazy composter. And
that's so, a good thing.
Yeah, that's just how I am, you know, so, but chickens did that for me, right? They'll take literally anything from my kitchen with just two exceptions, which is, you know, citrus rinds and banana peels, but everything else they would compost for me, you know, and happily, and, do it in about 24 hours. So it was just wonderful. And I got a really good system of then harvesting the chicken poop out, putting it in a bucket with water and stewing it for about maybe 3 or 4 weeks, and then using that as my fertilizer back into my garden. So to me, that was a really, and by the way, it's very controlled and controllable. I always knew exactly, you know, what the mix was, you know, to do. So I found that to be a really efficient system for me.
That's really beautiful. You know, and we were talking about side businesses. You know, there's a ton of little side businesses that come off of this that are amazing. Like I've had a friend of mine who had a rabbitry and he loved the rabbits. His kids were into 4-H and they just went crazy over the rabbits. He was way more than what they needed for their food supply. And so he was selling rabbit stock and he was selling rabbits to a processor and selling the rabbit meat. And he said, but you know what the most lucrative aspect of that was underneath. He got the droppings and he was raising red wrigglers and worms and worm castings. And that was where he made all of his money, was selling worm castings. So, you know, there was that whole thing, plus the worms then, of course, can feed chickens. I am actually looking at, I recently purchased an acre on a little farmhouse in an area in Colorado. And like this poor land really needs some oomph, you know, like it's been neglected for a while. So I'm thinking, wow, you know, I'm going to raise up a flock of meat birds. You know, really this is an acre, so it's not that much. Maybe I'll be maybe like 30 or 40 meat birds. And, really, I mean, yes, I want the meat and we're going to process and have that. And that's like, you know, realistically for me, it's like a 12-week project. I use heritage birds, which generally are a little slower than the Cornish Rock crosses, which only take about 8 weeks. But the real purpose of it is I want those birds all around my yard pooping. You know? Like, so I'm basically going to get chicken feed, turn it into protein, and then turn it into fertility in my yard. And, you know, and get these birds to help enliven the whole yard. I was like, back when we were in Texas, I was like, oh, I would love to have 2,000 or 3,000 chickens all over our pastures, just shitting all over the place. My husband's like, who did I marry?
I totally understand what's going on there. That's exciting.
It is. There are so many businesses, and quite frankly, more and more people are realizing that the food supply is toxic, and it is. I mean, you know, even the CDC is saying, look, all children born after 2000, one third of them they're expecting will become diabetics in their lifetime. And I'm like, we've already seen, and they're trying to cover it up, saying it's due to opioid overdose. That we're seeing that life expectancy is dropping. This is the first time in a century, and it's the third year in a row. Life expectancy is dropping. It's only in a tenth of a year, and it's pretty small right now. But I believe it's going to plummet because, you know, like let's take these kids born after 2000. You know, what is your life like as a, you know, and a lot of them are becoming diabetics in their teens or in their 20s. You know, what is their life expectancy realistically going to be when they're in their 30s and their 40s and they're dealing with, you know, renal collapse or the swollen feet, the edema, the swollen ankles and heart disease and obesity. And, you know, do you really think that these kids are going to make it to 50 or 60 or 70? And if they do, God help them, what miserable lives, you know, and it's the food. It's the food supply, right?
I know.
So we're headed into a tsunami on the whole life expectancy thing of just it plummeting. I feel it anyway with the Grow Network. There's definitely a real movement, and a lot of people are really getting it that it's about It's about us doing something. Organics, there's a big myth of organics. I'm definitely a proponent of organics. It's definitely a step in the right direction. When you're buying organic food, at least you know it's not genetically modified and it's going to have less toxic chemicals on it. But the organic brand has been usurped. You know, once the USDA took it over and then all the big corporations have taken it over, you know, I do applaud that it's a step in the right direction, but it has also lost a lot of what the original meaning and intent of it is. And the biggest myth about organics is that they're more nutrition and they're not. Test after test and study after study shows that organic food has about the same nutritional content as conventional food. And quite frankly, both of them are really, really, really bad. Decade after decade after decade, those numbers have been falling. There's not a single incident of more nutrition in any of the food. And the worst case example is carrots. You know, so I'm 56. When my mom was giving me carrots as a kid growing up in the 1960s, I now have to give my kids 11 carrots to get the same amount of nutrition as the one carrot my mom gave me, right?
Yeah.
So there ain't nothing in there. There ain't nothing in there. And the way to get something in there is to grow it yourself. And I think most people are realizing that's it, that really growing it ourselves is the way to really get in. Man, you can taste it. I have to travel for work. I shouldn't say I have to. I love it, but I travel a lot for work, which is kind of insane and seems somewhat incompatible with growing your own food, but I still manage it. And I just can't wait till I get back home again, because the food out there, and I'm a foodie, right? I eat at the best restaurants. It ain't nothing compared to what I'm growing in my backyard.
Mm. Very well said. And as a reminder to people listening, we did interview a gentleman from Food Democracy Now, not once but twice, talking about glyphosate. And remember, they found glyphosate residues at shocking levels in Cheerios and things like that. But even in organics, it was showing up because the speculation is that you're not allowed to use glyphosate on your property as an organic practice, but if you're using it as a desiccant, maybe that's allowed. So that's I think what you're talking about, Marjorie, part of the bastardization of that term and how it got sort of corporatized and wiggled around and things like that. So and you mentioned earlier that we may be more malnourished than people from West Africa, say, or other places, and that's, I think that might be a multifactorial thing we're trying to solve here. But part of it might be people are eating because they're hungry. They're not hungry for calories, but they're missing some essential nutrients. It might be a macronutrient, could be micronutrient. No selenium, no magnesium in the food anymore because it's not in the soil anymore and nobody puts it back, you know, and that could be part of the problem here too.
Yeah, that's so awesome. I was like cheering up and down when even Dr. Oz was saying that a little while ago, and then I think they shut him up and he stopped saying that. But yeah. He was like, you're not fat because you're bad and you're not overeating because you can't help eating. He says that your body is actually asking for more food because it's looking for nutrition. And when it's not in that food, and yeah, so they ended up shutting him down. It was pretty interesting, from that conversation. So,
yeah. So looking at the time, God, I have so many more questions on food, but I want to turn now to medicine. And you had quite the experience with a venomous snake bite that you successfully treated at home. Everybody listening, this is not medical advice. This is simply a very interesting anecdote. And what's interesting about that experience when I was reading through it was that your husband had a bite from a similar sort of a snake, and one was treated in the system, one was treated at home. Very different cost outcomes, all of that. Would you be willing to take people through some of that experience?
Sure, yeah. So, you know, in Central Texas where we live, and in rural Central Texas, got a lot of copperheads. And I'm a barefooter, and you would think that that would not be smart. But, you know, for the most part, you know, I have a good relationship with snakes. And you know, there's a number one rule in homesteading and in life. And I was violating that rule this one afternoon. And that is never stick your hands and your feet where you can't see them. And I was out in my tomato patch, and I don't know how I had this beefsteak tomato growing in there, which does not really grow in that region that well. Anyway, it was this gigantic tomato that like it was a specimen that like, oh my God, I wish there was a tomato contest right now. Uh-huh. Anyway, I was so excited about that. I just plunged into the patch to see if there was another one. And then bam, I felt something on my foot and I was like, uh-oh. And you know, looked down and sure enough, there's the two puncture wounds, and I did not see the snake. But I immediately go into the house and I tell my husband, I've been snake bit. He says, do you know what kind? And I said, no, because that's the number one thing. If you can identify the snake, that's hugely important. And you should know the snakes in your region. Pretty easy to learn. And so he immediately looks at the clock, because that's the first thing you always want to do in an emergency, know when things happen and start keeping a journal of it. And he knew that there was no way in hell I was going to a hospital. That's just not my MO, right? And he says, okay. And by the time I'd gotten back to the house, the pain was starting to hit me. And he goes, you're looking in pain. I said, yeah. He goes, copperhead. Because we both know that that's pretty much the only snake in that area with those kind of things. He says, what do you want to poultice it with? And because he knew that would be the treatment I would want. And so we're scratching my head. I'm like, oh man, there's the narrow leaf plantain, but there's so much of it. We never get a prickly pear. So he goes out to harvest some prickly pear for me. And then I took a quick shower, which I shouldn't have done, but it was Texas in the summertime, June. And then I laid down in the living room, which is where everything happens in our house. Like, that's the center of all activity.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he and my daughter, who is also pretty skilled as an herbalist and home medicine maker, they actually went and got the DVD that I'd created on how to treat these things. And they started reviewing that. Basically, they poulticed up my leg. I had quite a journey and some really, really neat, with a venom like that in your body, people would say, well, it's a hallucination. I would say that's really just a really superficial explanation of the experience I had. And I wrote about it in the book there. It was really a thing. And, but basically we treated the whole thing at home. And I honestly did not think that much about it because that's just what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was pretty much done with it in about 2 or 3 days. I was just super appreciative of my husband and my daughter for their care. I was back up and running around, really, really in about 3 days. And, I did not think anything of it at all, except I was actually kind of like, damn, I just missed 3 days of work. Like I got, when you have something like that, you're focusing on that. You're not going to be answering emails. You're focusing on healing that and letting your body rest and that. And then I started getting phone calls from radio hosts like, hey, we heard you got bitten by a snake. And I'm like, yeah, I did. And I said, it's no big deal. What do you mean it's no big deal? Get on there. We want you to tell the story. And I'm like, oh, wow, maybe it is a big deal. And it did have me stop and reflect that, oh, my gosh, I've been using herbal medicine maybe for about 20 years. And I started out as a woman who knew nothing. If anything happened, like the first thing I do is ignore any symptoms I had or any of my family. Like, okay, you can toughen up and get over that.
Mm-hmm.
And then if it really got bad, then we'd go to the drugstore and I would grab I'd overdo it. I'd like, okay, I want 2 or 3 they got all these choices. I'll grab 3 of them and take all of them. Right. And then if it got even worse, then I would buckle up and go to a doctor. And if it even got worse, then the last resort was the hospital. Right. So that was my medical plan. And that's all I knew. And, being a young mom and starting on that whole journey, I started learning more about herbs and learning more about herbalism and how to take care of yourself. And then really looking at that snake bite story, it was like, wow, I just really hadn't realized how far I'd come in 20 years to where a potentially lethal snake bite didn't even faze me. I mean, that's just what we do. And my husband had been bitten 3 years before. Now he is not at all interested in, he's always in admiration of what I do and they often accept the treatments I give them, but he's still, when you get into his core and a copperhead bite is it can be fatal. There aren't that many fatalities because usually people get treatment right away, which is very wise. In whatever form you do it, just start getting treatment. But I knew his belief system is he was going to want. So we did the hospital adventure, which was this huge. Oh my God, the medical system is so good at creating drama. And, I think our out-of-pocket expenses were something like $7,000, but the whole total bill, even with insurance and everything, was somewhere around $30,000. It's crazy, crazy, crazy numbers. And, just the stuff they did, the antibiotics messed up his gut. I mean, it was just a really, really you know, and then the disruption to the family because, you know, while I'm with him at the hospital, who's taking care of the dogs and all the shuffling around that you have to do. I mean, the whole, it was just a drama, just a huge drama. And actually, after we did the thing at home with me, and my husband goes, wow, you know, if I ever get bit, I think we should just treat it at home. Like, thank God, you know, like, yes, we should. Right?
Yeah.
So I don't want to encourage people to go out and treat a snake bite right now if you've never done anything. But it real like all of these things, you know, yeah, try some elderberry syrup this winter when you get that cough and just notice how you feel. Or, you know, make yourself some fire cider. Or start taking some garlic before the holidays and just see if you're the one who doesn't get sick and everybody else gets sick. You know, when you do get a cut or a bruise, you know, instead of grabbing for the Neosporin or whatever, you know, try making your own homemade salve and trying that. You know, do it in small ways and build up your confidence and go like, wow, that really worked. Or sometimes it doesn't work, you know, like, mm-hmm, you know, right? But really start to take your power back, because really this is how we always did it. I mean, this modern medical stuff has only been around for what, a century or something like that? Prior to that, everybody treated things at home. And if you did see a doctor, it was most likely the veterinarian. So, you know, we are used to, and for me, the thing about it is it's way more than just being able to take care of yourself. It's the family glue, you know, that my daughter was there and my husband was there taking care of me. I mean, there is a bond between us. There is a bond between us that is real and it's palpable, and there are memories and there's a deep appreciation, and you are robbed of all of that when you go to the hospital. My daughter had a fever when she was about 8 years old, and you know, so she comes into bed, Mama, I don't feel so good. And it's funny, in the middle of the night when something like that happens to you, even though I'm like trained in all this stuff and I teach people about all that, like I completely panicked. I'm like, what the hell do I do? Mm-hmm. So actually I go to my own resources, my own home medicine thing, and I look up the second and I'm like, okay, most fevers, you really don't need to do anything. And it was such a beautiful night to lay with her and have my body warmth, keeping her warm, and have a cool cloth that I was working on her forehead to calm her and soothe her. And just hold her all night and to carry her through that. And, you know, that is such a precious time and such a precious moment. And I know she knows that. And there's things between us that would never happen if you just say, here, pop some ibuprofen and, you know, see me in the morning. You know, like, home medicine is so much more than just healing yourself. That's a part of it, but sort of like your gardening is so much more than just producing food. You know, I'd say growing your own food, the process of growing food is where the health benefits are. Yeah, you get to eat more nutritious food, but the process of growing food is so healthy. And the same thing with home medicine, you know, yeah, you heal, but the process of healing and being engaged and sharing love and care and tenderness, that's potent stuff, right?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a couple of my learnings in this area were that I think I've been sold a bill of goods, right? Which I can relate to part of where your husband's mindset is. It was mine for a long time, too. And maybe it's still buried in there. But it was really, I think I got sold this bill of goods that says, when you get sick, you know, that's kind of almost like a condition. We have to treat you and get back to healthy. To me now, I understand health is the baseline and sick is not the baseline, you know, because everything in our culture is about how hard you have to work and God, you're gonna have to control your eating. You're gonna have to go to the gym go to the gym all the time to control your weight. Like in our culture now, what's true is that you have to work hard to be healthy, and that's upside down. That's complete flip. That's not how it's supposed to be. Our bodies are constantly returning to health. Health is the baseline. But to get there, I think you just have to make sure it's got the right inputs, right? That's, you know, there's supportive things we can do in terms of garbage in, garbage out, eating the right food to start with. And then there's lots of ways that we've integrated with the world around us through our gut biome and through the plant medicines and everything that are all there, almost as if by magic, to design to help us return to that healthy baseline.
I agree with you. I believe that health is our birthright, and that's what our natural state is. We live in a physical reality, and in physical reality, you know, it's garbage in, garbage out. Absolutely. You know, and how you take care of your body by what you feed it, you know, feeding it high quality things makes a difference. The thoughts you think, you know, I know for us, it's really, you know, for me, it was quite a trap for a long time. Cause you know, when I was learning more and more about how the world is actually wired, you know, it was like, oh my God, you know, and then it's kind of seductive cause you want to learn more and, you know, like, oh, that's what's really going on or, you know, who knows, but, you know, saying, look, I'm going to disconnect from that now. I totally get that that's all happening, but, it's not doing me any good. I'm going to just let go or, you know, disconnecting from the news. You know, people who sit down at 5:30 with their beer at the end of a long day to watch the news when they get relaxed and they're drinking and they're also suggestible, they're just getting totally reprogrammed. And, you know, the news, if it bleeds, it leads. I mean, and I'm sure you've seen this on your blog and we avoid this. But the blogs that are screaming the loudest and making the most noise and getting the most angry and getting the most upset and causing the most controversy are the ones that get the most traffic. Right? Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't want to go there. Like, I don't want to create that in the world. And I don't want that in my own mind. So what you're thinking is, you know, shifting your perspective. You know, we know the world's crazy. Like, let's focus on what we can do. Let's focus on what's proactive. And, you know, we have a choice. Let's just nudge ourselves toward the healthiest option possible and, you know, not to get too rigid about it. As I said, I travel quite a bit for this business, appearances, radio, television, that kind of thing. And, you know, I just make the best choice I can at the moment. And a lot of times that best choice is far inferior to what I really want, but you know, it's the best choice at the moment. So I'm going for it, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're very much aligned. I don't spend any time. Sometimes I have people wander by and say, Chris, why aren't you out there helping to figure out which president to get elected next? And I don't think it matters at this stage. Personally, I think it's, you know, structurally, we're over the tip of our skis on all of this. When you understand the base data, a podcast guest of mine, Stephen Jenkinson, wonderful man, said awareness today is a grief soaked proposition. Right. So if you really understand what's happening in the world, you know, the grief does come. And then the question is, well, that's OK. You can't stew there forever. What do? Grief needs to move. And that comes through the action. So if people aren't motivated to action by what they see around there, don't by all means, do not read another thing. Right. Don't ingest any more information, because information without action in this day and age is terrorizing, I think. So if you have enough information for action, what do? And you can grow your own food, you can grow your own medicine. And if you were going to give people just a few things they might think about medicinally, they could do at home as a place to start, either to support general health or treat infections or simple things like that. Where would they start?
Okay, really simple one is garlic. And you know, I'm sure you're aware, the antibiotic resistance issue is a thing. Mm-hmm. It's a thing, and it's hitting us. It's coming soon to you know, an infection near you. Garlic is just an amazing first home medicine. It's one that I really recommend for people, and it's just great. I use it proactively in the holidays. So for example, you know, you're going to be going back and you're seeing all the family and there's 50 of you crowded into a room that's designed for 10 of you. So the air circulation is terrible and everybody came from everywhere. So you're going to be like exposed to everything. And I don't have any problem with that. But strengthen up my immune system to be able to handle it. Really, I don't think, you know, Aunt Martha gave me that. I think that my immune system was weak and Aunt Martha happened to have it and I grabbed it, you know. Garlic, a fresh garlic, take a clove of garlic, use the side of a knife to crush it and then chop it up real fine, let it sit in the air for about 5 minutes and it oxidizes and releases what they're called alanins, I believe, is the potent medicine. And you take a spoonful of that. And I definitely don't do that on an empty stomach. And, you know, like if I'm doing it proactively, like before the holidays, like a couple of days before I know I'm going to be going in with all these people and doing all this crazy stuff and eating food I don't normally eat and getting outside of my normal thing. probably staying up way too late with the teenagers. I'll, you know, do that 3 or 4 times a day with the garlic just to really boost up my immune system. I also do that if, like, for example, when I got bit by the snake, you know, there may be some, my immune system is going to need some boosting up. If I have an external infection going on, like I've sliced open my leg or I've been punctured or something, man, living in Texas, you got to be a badass. That state just wants to puncture you or scrape you or bite you or sting you or whatever. You know, I just take an internal antibiotic like that, a natural antibiotic. Here's the cool thing about garlic. So your pharmaceutical antibiotics are one thing. So penicillin is penicillin. It's one thing, right? Tetracycline is tetracycline. It's one thing. And so all the bacteria that are in there, they're like, you know, most of them die off, but some of them figure out like, oh, that's tetracycline. And they figure out how to go around it. And then they begin to propagate. And that's how we have antibiotic resistance. I think actually penicillin was the precursor to MRSA because that's the bacteria that figured out how to get around penicillin. And then that created MRSA. And so, you know, I mean, it's life, right? Life figures stuff out. Well, garlic has, gosh, I think it's 35 known constituents now, and who knows how many unknown ones that are antibiotic, antimicrobial, antifungal. So when you take that into your system and the bugs are coming, they're like, oh, you know, they can't figure it out. Like, it's not just one thing it has to go around. It's this whole complex. So it's just a really, really great general antibiotic, especially if you have any kind of cough or lung stuff going on. It's really especially good with the respiratory system. So, you know, I really, really recommend that as your first home medicine. And it's, you know, it's really simple. Some things not to do: don't cook it, that you're going to destroy. Don't get the garlic that comes in capsules at the health food store. That's, you know, you're kidding yourself with that. You know, don't use old garlic that's starting to turn brown. Use a fresh clove of garlic. And I've written a whole thing up, and I think it's garlicmiracles.com. I'll have to get you the exact website. You can give it up to people, but everybody kept asking me about this. So I went ahead and wrote an ebook about it to get it out there. And that's a really great first, home medicine to start using and, you know, start noticing it. And again, you know, there's so many wonderful alternatives out there. Just start with one or two. The vast majority, I only really have about a dozen different herbs that I work with regularly, and you really only need about 5 to handle like 90% of the stomach aches and the headaches and the anxiety and the insomnia. I mean, all that, really, most of the stuff, 95% of what comes up in a family, you can treat at home very, very successfully with just a handful of different medicines that you've made yourself. So just start with one and start getting comfortable with that and learning how to use it and going, wow, you know what? There really is a lot of power in these herbs. And you know, get your first taste of power with this of like, wow, I really did avoid something big by munching on this garlic. And, you know, or wow, you know, that elderberry cough syrup, you know, really did alleviate my cough. And my husband, who did not take the stuff because he was laughing at me, is still sick. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know how many testimonials we have that are women that are like, I was fine in a day or two and he's still in bed. You know, yeah, right on, sister. You know, like, I get you.
Well, and guys aren't as tough. Let's just be honest. Okay.
We know that. I know. I'm just, you know, but it's usually the women who are like, I think we can, because really we normally are the caretakers in a family. And this actually used to be our purview. This is what we used to do. And bringing it back home again is a part of what the Grow Network's mission is.
Great. Well, that's fantastic. And I would add to that just one other thing, which has been in my family structure, we also swear by Steri-Strips, which is a device you can use almost like in place of stitches. So for even pretty serious cuts, my son, who was then 9 or 10 at the time, had a bowl carving knife, a really wicked sharp curved thing, and he carved the whole top of his thumb off practically, like a big giant, you know, shark tooth shaped flapper. You know, and so, you know, a lot of pressure till it stopped bleeding, you know, until it was not a flood, and then Steri-Strip the heck out of it, got him down to the hospital, and they took one look at it and they said, looks good, you know, We wouldn't do anything else. You know, I think they put a stitch in, so they say they could, and so they could bill a few thousand. But, you know, we learned that, and unfortunately in this day and age, you know, we hear these tragic stories of people with broken legs saying, don't call an ambulance, I can't afford it. Or knowing that even that little cut might run them or set them back a household breaking several thousands of dollars, which the median household doesn't have, and things like that. So in many cases, it's becoming mandatory for people in a financial sense to return to things that our grandfathers, great-grandmothers would not be at all surprised by, which is, oh, yeah, you treat that wound appropriately, it will heal. If you take a few supportive things, which in our medicinal arsenal that just happen to be around growing here and we know how to use them, you will get less sick than average. And all of that stuff. So I think that it's a good time to be bringing these things back because A, they work, B, they're cost effective, C, it connects us again. Like that story about being with your daughter with her illness, it connects us again to ourselves and each other. And it reminds me deep down that I was really struck by this TED talk where this person, an addiction specialist, talking about heroin in Portugal and said that the opposite of addiction isn't sobriety, it's connection. I was like, wow, that really rang. And so I studied it and figured out that that's actually true. And the original connection is to self, but it's also to other, but it's also to sense of place, right? And that's what the garden does for me when I said it has this magical spiritual quality. It gives me a sense of connection to place that's wired into my DNA somehow. I can't explain how, but there it is. And it really has an extraordinary set of benefits that's what I would like to alert people to, is just that there's something lurking there that's really big. I don't know what it is yet, but everybody I know who gardens or gets connected back through medicine or their food or reconnects themselves finds that's really life supportive in some pretty deep ways.
It sure is. Wow. I love that. Yeah. You know, so many wonderful moments that I've had out in the garden or with the livestock where I really began to, that my sense of community extended way beyond the humans to where it's an ecosystem. My whole yard is, by the way, makeyourownmedicine.com. If I can give a quick word for that, we have a free four-part training there to teach people, you know, the three reasons why you should be doing this. And then the eight preparations, how to make them at home. And I think we go into a peek into my medical kit. So it's a free thing. We're just getting out there to try to get more people to doing their own medicine. And we really, and then, you know, that actually ultimately can turn, we have a lot of people, the Grow Network is not about creating professional herbalists, but quite a few people in our community have started out with home medicine and really, really gotten into it and then moved on and become a neighborhood herbalist. And, you know, after a while, people will start coming up to you and asking you, like, what should I take for this or what should I do for that? And it can become a whole nother, either a side income or a profession. And quite frankly, we need that. We need a whole lot more of that.
And by the time those class 4 and 5 rapids come up, we're going to need a lot more of that.
We sure are.
Well, Marjorie,
I'm pretty excited about the future, to be honest with you.
That's good to hear.
I think, you know, I've noticed people don't usually change without a big crisis. I don't. Things going great. I'm not, you know, why disturb anything and change it? So crisis is a good thing. And, you know, quite frankly, we're wasting so much and there's so many bizarre things and energy used in bizarre ways that are not appropriate. So, you know, a good couple of crises to just shake people up. And I have a lot of faith in the adaptability of humanity and in the goodness of humanity. So I think the what's coming is just a necessary change and you know, we just need something to shake us up and that I think it's going to be a good thing.
I agree. And local mileage may vary in that story, but I think everybody needs to really consider how they're going to begin supporting themselves, become self-sufficient in growing food. If you can grow half your food in an hour, why not? You really, really should be doing that. So, Marjorie, tell us what's next for you. What lies in the future, and what projects are you working on? Because I did hint in a book, "Grow All True Wealth Comes from the Ground." Love the title.
I love that book. Yeah,
is that your next project?
I have got a literary agent, one of them fancy Manhattan ones too. Yeah. And yes, and I'm actually in the process of writing the book, and we are going to do a thing where we select a publisher here pretty soon. So that's pretty exciting. We're real excited about the forums that we've got up and going. We are continuing to bring out more products and services just to help this whole, you know, this whole movement happening. And I'm very, very excited. I think the book is going to really be a game changer for the Grow Network in getting more exposure and awareness of what's going on out there. And it's a very, very positive thing. And we, and in it, you know, I talk about one of the biggest bridges is money, and it's becoming a bigger and bigger and bigger issue for people because, you know, the wages have not kept up. And well, you're well aware. I mean, there's a lot of people in our community that just don't have financial resources. And I'm like, hey, wealth should not be defined by money. Wealth is defined by your health, by your family and your family connections, by your community, by doing meaningful work, and by living a life of purpose. That's what real wealth is. And so that's the message of the book. And a lot of those things all come from the ground. They come from growing food or making medicine, which all comes from the ground. So it's a very inspirational perspective. And, you know, forget the fast cars and the jewelry and the bank accounts and the, you know, the apartment in Abu Dhabi or whatever, right? You know, that's like not going to do you anything. Like what's in that? There's nothing in that, right? So we're real stoked about the book. Yep. Twice a year, we're continuing to have summits. So the home medicine summit's coming up here pretty soon. And this is not one of those big doctors that are on Oprah kind of thing. It's more about the real herbalists that have been doing this for 20, 30, 40 years, talking about, you know, how to take care of your gut or, you know, how to treat diabetes or, you know, their real world experiences of using herbs over and over again to take care of things and showing you how to do it. And then in the spring every year, we have the Homegrown Food Summit, where again, these are not fancy big name. I get, there aren't really a lot of fancy big name people in the growing food space, but it's, you know, people who, you know, for 30 years, she's been raising donkeys. How do you raise donkeys? Or, you know, the guy with straw bale gardens, you know, Joel, you know, how do you do straw bale gardens? Or, you know, Stacy Murphy on greens, growing greens, you know, just the people who have been doing it for years and years and years and teach it and share with the rest of the world. So we love doing the summits. That's my big thing. We're gonna have you on one of our summits, Chris. I bet you have a lot of really great advice for folks on side income generation on your homestead or something like that.
Well, yeah, I'm sure we do. We've got we have a lot of content, and a lot of it is actually managing and dealing with the emotional resilience around all of this. So we build ours around the innate form of capital, financial resilience, important to have financial capital, but social capital, living capital, et cetera, and so forth. So we go through eight forms and guide people down that process. And it's, I'm sure it's very similar to what you take people through. And mostly it's just to get to that aha moment of saying, here's what I think I'm going to focus on next. Because one of the most powerful people, you know, I heard about is this woman has this amazing place. It's just astonishing place, just like everything you could possibly imagine, all these integrated systems. And somebody was interviewing her and said, God, how did you do this? You know? And she said, I just did the next thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it really is. It is just that, isn't it? Yeah. Beautiful.
So yeah. I'm just interested in, you know, whatever inspiration people need to do the next thing. That's it. And you look back in 10 years and you go, wow, I got a lot done. And that's just life. That's how that works. So I'm intrigued, though, these summits. How would people find out more about them and when and where are they?
The Home Medicine Summit, this is going to be this fall. It'll be starting on October 14th. But really, if you want to stay in tune with that, just head over to thegrownetwork.com and sign up for our newsletter. We only send out two newsletters a week. And it's full of blog posts and things like that. And we'll give you the notice of when the home medicine comes out. And then we have not defined the dates for the spring Homegrown Food Summit. But all those events, it's a classic summit model, you know, they're for free for the whole week. And I really love that business model that you give it all away. And then for the people who can afford it to buy the package to support the whole thing, they do. So, yeah. And I love it. We've been doing them now for, I think we're on our sixth year and our 11th summit. So, or something like that. It's crazy. Mm-hmm. We've been having a ball. You know, the reason I did them I was on the Mother Earth news circuit for a long time, you know, going all the Mother Earth news fairs and, you know, speaking and I would miss, like, oh my God, the guy who's the editor of Mother Earth News, he like gave this great presentation on corn and growing sweet corn and you know, all these different corn varieties that's been in this family for. This other guy had this whole thing from Seed Savers Exchange on how to graft apple trees, and I was like, I missed that. And I'm like, dang it, I missed it. Like, wait a minute. I can invite them to the summit to see their presentation. So that's what it ended up being, was I couldn't, it was like, I wanted to see all these, so I do it primarily for me, for all this really cool or interesting or wacky ideas on how to grow food or make medicine or, you know, how to take care of yourself. And it's just like a big fun party like that.
Well, excellent. That sounds like a lot of fun. And are those in Texas?
They're online. They're on the planet. They're on Earth. Yeah. So it's available, at the website. Let's see, I think the homemedicinesummit.com and then the homegrownfoodsummit.com. But mm-hmm. again, if you go over to the Grow Network and sign up for our newsletter, we'll give you plenty of notice, you know, and Chris, we may have you let folks know on your list also to give a notice about it. So.
Well, excellent. We would love to do that. And of course, when your book, All True Grow, All True Wealth Comes from the Ground, when that comes out, of course, we'll have you back on then. And unless that's too far from now, and then we'll have you on anyway, because this has been a fascinating, excellent podcast. I've loved the message. And I really believe it is true that there's lots that we can do, and that the message that's sort of fed to us is there's nothing we can do. You're powerless. Humans, we extract and we degenerate things. But honestly, we can be the opposite of all those things, too. Regenerative, create abundance. You're a living model of that. Your homestead is, and that's what people need to see and know about. So thank you for your time today, and I really look forward to doing this again.
Well, thank you, Chris, and I really appreciate all the work that you've been doing too.
Well, thank you so much for that, Marjorie. It's been a pleasure, and this is Chris Martinson signing off for today. Hey, everybody, go out, create abundance and prosperity in your lives.